Fontainebleau, France, 1960. Picture a 5-year-old boy prowling the American Officers Club, wide-eyed and silent, absorbing stories from men who'd flown combat missions over Germany and the Pacific. These weren't just military officers. They were World War II legends who'd faced death countless times and lived to laugh about it. Their wives arrived dressed to perfection, cigarettes and cocktails in hand, strong women who'd married adventurous pilots, knowing full well the price. What struck young McRaven most? Every single one of these marriages lasted until death, no small feat given the chaos of military life. Friday nights became ritual. The boy listened as they recounted air combat, frontline experiences, and daring escapes. These stories planted seeds of adventure that would shape an entire life. After his father's stroke, the family moved to San Antonio, where the circle expanded. Colonel Tex Hill of the Flying Tigers with 28 confirmed kills, Colonel Jim Gunn, who'd escaped a Romanian POW camp by stealing a Messerschmitt. This generation, children of World War I, who survived a depression and fought in World War II and Korea, possessed something rare. They transformed hardships into laughter-filled stories. They understood that life's difficulties could either crush you or become the foundation of character. As his father often said with a wink, "Bill, it's all how you remember it." In 1966 San Antonio, three boys hatched Operation Volcano, an elaborate plan to infiltrate the triple-fenced compound housing mysterious bunker structures near Lackland Air Force Base. Armed with Roy Rogers cap guns, Davy Crockett rifles, and Red Ryder BB guns, they were inspired by James Bond and convinced these gravel gurdies housed nuclear weapons. Their secret weapon? Hot dogs to distract the canine patrol dogs. The mission began badly. A diamondback rattlesnake fixed its gaze on nervous lookout John, launching forward when young McRaven tossed a rock near it. They scattered, but pressed on through the snake-filled gully. After narrowly avoiding an Air Force police officer taking a bathroom break in the woods, McRaven climbed the first fence, fell inside the perimeter, climbed back out, then crossed the supposedly electric second fence. Just as he reached the third fence with a clear view of the bunker, sirens blared and red lights flashed. He frantically retreated, tossing hot dogs everywhere to distract the approaching guard dog. As they fled, loudspeakers announced, "Use of lethal force is authorized," followed by a shotgun blast. Days later, his father confronted him about the attempted break-in. Seeing genuine fear in his father's eyes, young McRaven lied, for the first and last time to his father, denying involvement. That night, he found his Roy Rogers six-shooter placed on his nightstand. A silent message. His father knew the truth, but was giving him a second chance. In 1977, SEAL trainee McRaven faced Hell Week with 55 remaining trainees from the original 155. Class leader Daniel Stewart rallied them with a philosophy that would guide an entire career. Take it one evolution at a time. Focus only on the challenge directly in front of you. Hell Week began Sunday night with chaos, machine gun fire, and smoke grenades. Within the first hour, several men rang the bell to quit as they endured repeated orders to hit the surf in the freezing Pacific. By Wednesday, 40 men remained. Sleep-deprived and hallucinating, they continued through boat races, log PT, and surf torture. During an IBS race, their boat capsized in massive surf. McRaven was pinned beneath the 200-pound rubber boat, lungs burning, until it shifted and he surfaced gasping. After 5 days without sleep, they paddled 12 miles around San Diego Bay. Halfway through, McRaven hallucinated, seeing mermaids and phantom buildings. At the finish line came one last surprise: carry the boats another mile up the beach. 33 men graduated. This lesson, breaking impossible challenges into manageable pieces, would serve McRaven from combat missions to planning the Bin Laden raid. In 1981 Philippines, after a botched hostage rescue exercise, Marine Colonel Barney Browse showed unexpected grace toward exhausted McRaven. Despite delays and oppressive heat, Browse insisted on completing their mission, boarding MC-130 Combat Talons for a 3-hour low-level flight. At 0500, McRaven gave Browse one last chance to bow out. They returned to their jeep. Half an hour later, MC-130 Stray 59 crashed into the sea, killing 23 of 24 men aboard. Had they boarded, they would have perished. 20 years later, as an admiral approving combat missions, McCraven always weighed whether risk justified reward. In 1995, commanding SEAL Team 3, McCraven joined a training exercise in Morro Bay's treacherous surf. Their coxswain gunned the engines at precisely the wrong moment. Their boat launched skyward before slamming down and capsizing. Trapped underwater with shot line wrapped around his neck like a garrote, lungs convulsing, McCraven struggled until breaking free. Two SEALs grabbed him just before the next wave hit. These experiences taught that life is fragile. Whether divine intervention, luck, or fate, forces beyond our control shape destiny. October 1990, Indian Ocean. The Iraqi supertanker Amuria refused to stop despite warning shots from an Australian destroyer and an F-14 screaming overhead. After Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, their squadron was ordered to intercept this vessel, reportedly carrying something valuable. They fast-roped onto the deck, McCraven's gloved hands burning before hitting steel with painful thud. The master screamed, "American pirates!" as McCraven confronted him, "You have 1 minute to stop this vessel, or I will stop it for you." Lieutenant Dave Kaufman's quick reaction force quickly corralled the belligerent crew. During Desert Storm, intelligence revealed Saddam planned an ecological disaster, filling ships with oil and sinking them in the Arabian Gulf. On January 23rd, an A-6 from USS Midway sank the Amuria off Boubion Island before it could be loaded. 5 days into his counterterrorism role, McCraven received an unusual task: draft a letter from the president to the Pope justifying war in Afghanistan in 1 week. By November, as head of the Interagency Hostage Coordination Group, he learned American missionaries Martin and Gracia Burnham had been held hostage by Abu Sayyaf terrorists in the Philippines for 6 months. President Bush approved his rescue plan within minutes. In June, Filipino forces located the hostages, but Martin was killed in crossfire while Gracia survived with a leg wound. When Gracia called to thank him, McCraven vowed something good would come from Martin's death. In December 2003, a powerful premonition drove McCraven to return immediately from Qatar to Baghdad's Joint Operations Center. Upon arrival, Squadron Commander Bill Coltrup reported, "Big jackpot, they'd pulled Saddam from a spider hole." Interrogations revealed Saddam had no knowledge of weapons of mass destruction. McCraven visited daily during his month-long detention, but never engaged him, gradually diminishing his sense of power. Saddam was hanged on December 30, 2006. As terrible as it sounds, every SEAL longs for a worthy fight. War challenges your manhood, reaffirms courage, builds unbreakable bonds, and gives life meaning. When Somali pirates kidnapped Captain Richard Phillips in April 2009, Captain Scott Go-To-War Moore informed McCraven that Lieutenant Commander Jonas Kelsall had 7 SEALs in Nairobi who could reach USS Bainbridge within 6 hours. Moore proposed deploying his entire 60-person hostage rescue package, not just to rescue Phillips, but to potentially strike pirate camps and end the piracy problem entirely. By Sunday evening, the Bainbridge had convinced pirate leader Muse to come aboard and attached a tow line to the lifeboat, deliberately pulling it through rough wake to make the remaining pirates increasingly miserable. 3 SEAL snipers positioned on the fantail would attempt shots through the lifeboat's portholes, an extremely difficult task given fading daylight, a moving boat, and limited visibility. After several failed attempts, they achieved alignment. Sniper 1. Target 1. Green. Sniper 2. Target 2. Green. Sniper 3. Target 3. Green. Execute. 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 Moments later, Phillips is alive. All 3 pirates were dead. It was Easter Sunday, a fitting day for a rescue. As McRaven's staff member noted, every day you get to do some good. Someone is alive today because the guys did their job. In Landstuhl, Germany, May 2007, McCraven visited a severely wounded soldier under 25 with catastrophic IED injuries, burns covering his upper body, parts of both legs lost, his face badly damaged. Unable to speak, he communicated via clipboard. When McCraven joked, "You should see the other guy," he wrote back, Noticing a damaged Big Red One tattoo, McRaven commented on his being a soldier. He immediately wrote, "Infantry," with emphasis. As McRaven assessed his battered body, defiance crossed his swollen face. He rolled toward McRaven and wrote in capital letters, "I will be infantry again." Every wounded warrior McRaven visited, hundreds with missing limbs, blindness, paralysis, asked when they could return to their unit. At Walter Reed, Sergeant Brendan Morocco, who'd lost all four limbs in Iraq, wanted to return to Hawaii to meet his company. Sensing pity, he smiled. "Sir, I'm 24 years old. I have my whole life in front of me. I'm going to be just fine." Brendan later received bilateral arm transplants and now travels the country helping those less fortunate than himself. On May 1, 2011, Operation Neptune Spear reached its climax. Inside the compound's third floor, SEALs encountered two young girls. The lead SEAL threw himself on them to shield his partner, fearing suicide vests. Senior Chief Petty Officer Rob O'Neill confronted a tall, thin man using a woman as a shield and fired three rounds, two to the head. "For God and country, Geronimo, Geronimo, Geronimo," the squadron commander announced. McRaven relayed to CIA Director Panetta, "Sir, we have Geronimo EKI." After loading Bin Laden's body, the SEALs detonated the downed Black Hawk and extracted via Chinook. At Jalalabad, McRaven examined the body, having a 6'2" SEAL lie beside it to confirm it measured at least 6'4". That night, Bin Laden's remains were transported to USS Carl Vinson and committed to the sea following Islamic guidelines. For those lost on 9/11 and in the wars that followed, justice had been served. Missions like Neptune Spear aren't isolated events. They're the product of thousands of previous operations. The SEALs had conducted hundreds of similar raids, perfecting their techniques night after night. From that mischievous 5-year-old prowling the officers' club to the admiral who brought justice for 9/11, these sea stories reveal a fundamental truth. Character isn't built in moments of glory, but in countless small decisions. To keep going when exhausted, to protect your teammates, to take one more evolution. That's the legacy worth carrying forward, one evolution at a time.